This is Melissa Bartell, the Bathtub Mermaid, and you're listening to Tales from the Tub.
You say it's your birthday. Well, it's my birthday too, yeah. Actually, it really is my birthday. It's day 17 of the Dog Days of Podcasting. It's August 17th, 2019, and today I am 49 years old. It's the last day, or it's the first day of the last year of my 40s. And I still get carded sometimes when the gray doesn't show in my hair. We don't talk about that color very often. We just don't. I have a guest reader again today. I have a guest reader all weekend because it's my birthday weekend. I shouldn't have to record my own stuff, right? But my guest reader is doing a very special piece. So this is the first piece I wrote in the June Short Story Challenge. We were asked to write about birth. We were asked to write a fictional piece about our own birth. So I did that. It's sort of mostly fictional because obviously you're never aware of your own birth, but it's pieced together from stories I've heard and events that are mostly true from August 17th, 1970. And it is read by Jason Gregory Banks of Talk Nerdy to Me. And I hope you enjoy it. Oh, and it's called Eclipse.
It's hot. It's hot and it's humid. And the only thing that makes this hot and humid different from the hot and humid he was in a week ago is that a week ago there was blood in his boots from marching through the jungle in the dark, and now he's not wearing boots. His feet are wrapped in cotton gauze, and there are blue cloth booties over that. There's gauze around his right bicep, too, and a bandage over that. He can't tell if the wetness seeping through the layers of cotton and gauze is sweat or blood or both. He wants to look, but he also doesn't. It's early morning, the time when choppers usually come out of the night, or the planes come to blanket the jungle with strafing fire. Ignoring his arm, he turns his head to look out the window. There's a partial lunar eclipse. They told him, but he's not sure he wants to see the moon in the shadow. The moon has always been his friend. He closes his eyes, but he swears he can hear the blades of the whirlybirds circling closer and closer and feel the breeze from their spinning blades. The smell of bacon. Bacon? An antiseptic. Take him out of the war-torn jungle and put him back into the here and now. He's Private Miller. Gregory Miller. Drafted. Taught to shoot at people he never had an issue with. People who were shooting at him for reasons he's still not sure of. And they didn't miss. But they also didn't kill him. So he's back stateside in New Jersey, in August, in a hospital with no AC and a rickety fan that sounds like an incoming helicopter. At least, to someone like him. A corpsman comes with a breakfast tray, and he asks about the heat. Energy crisis, he told him. Only the surgical theater, ICU, and maternity wards have cooling, per orders of the commander-in-chief. He's been taught to respect the office, if not the man. But he can't help but wonder if Tricky Dick is doing this to punish the military for not crushing the VC and ousting the Ho Chi Minh. He eats his breakfast. The bacon and eggs are real, no rations, and the coffee is amazing, despite the hot and humid that settled into his bones. Even here in the clean, bright hospital. When the corpsman comes for the tray, he asks for help to use the bathroom. And then he goes back to bed and loses himself in sleep. He isn't really sleepy, but at the same time, he's exhausted. The light has changed when he wakes again, in time for lunch. A burger, fries, a salad, and an icy cold Coke in a glass bottle. Vintage. He'd kill for a beer, but the Coke is almost as good right now. It's proof he's really home, or close to it anyway. After lunch, another corpsman comes to help him to the bathroom. He's shaky. His feet are tender, but he's grateful to have them. He was half convinced he'd wake up to find stumps. He remembers the line of infection starting up his leg. Luck. It's all just fucking luck. The corpsman has a wheelchair waiting when he leaves the bathroom. He doesn't take him back to the ward. Am I being kidnapped? He asks, only half kidding. Nope. Rescue. The corpsman is the size of a linebacker, black, with dark eyes that are difficult to read. His looks make him more likely to be on a football field or at the door of a disreputable bar than in a military hospital. But Miller feels like the bigger man can be trusted. Thought I already was. Rescue, the corpsman says, is an ongoing process. He accepts the statement as they leave the general ward and enter the maternity ward. Cool air wraps around him almost immediately. He sighs, sinking into it. Oh, that's nice.
Yep, it is. But you gotta earn it.
Oh?
Yep.
How?
They enter a room full of bassinets. About half aren't in use. Some hold sleeping babies. The rest? He realizes that while some of the people in the rockers are new mothers, new fathers, some are wounded vets like him.
I don't have a kid here, he says.
I know.
The corpsman stops him near a bassinet with a baby girl in it. He knows it's a girl because she's got a pink bow taped to her bassinet. There's no name yet. Did you know that human contact in the first few hours after birth is crucial for newborns? This little girl just joined us today. Her mother's asthmatic. It was a rough delivery. She's exhausted. It'd be a big help if you could hold her for a while.
I've never held a baby.
I'll teach you.
But I... Won't her father be pissed?
He's, not in the picture. He moves to the rocker, lets the corpsman place the tiny baby in his hands. She's not even as long as his arm, from elbow to wrist, and she smells clean and new. Ivory soap, and new beginnings wrapped in a cotton blanket. The rocking begins unconsciously. He's in a rocker. It's what you do. The singing, well, probably no one's ever tried to turn "We Gotta Get Out of This Place" into a lullaby before, but the baby doesn't seem to care about the lyrics, and the air conditioning is bliss. He comes to rock the little girl every day that week, always in the late afternoons. On Friday, they wheel in a woman wearing a yellow nightgown under her hospital-issue robe and slippers.
"I think you're in my spot," she says, her tone wary.
"You're the mother?"
"Yes."
"She's beautiful."
He gives up the rocker and hands over the baby, asking, "Have you picked out a name yet?"
"I was going to name her after my brother, but he insisted that I can't burden a child with a name like his."
She shares the name with him, and he agrees. It's awful.
"Is your brother a soldier?"
The woman looks away. "Not exactly." "AWOL then," he's guessing, "or something else." "I'm sorry, I'm just..." Yellow nightgown woman is quick to assure him. "No, it's fine. My father's career army. He'll fix it. But it hurt him. And it's just hard." She pauses. Her tone is softer when she asks, "Were you at Ripcord?"
He's surprised. She knows the name. Most people just know Vietnam and nothing else. Most people don't care about the details.
"Yeah, it was."
"You don't have to tell me," she says. "I'm glad you got out."
"Thank you," he answers,
because he doesn't know what else to say. The corpsman comes to take him back to his bed. Then, but he offers as he leaves,
"Maybe you could use the first letter of your brother's name.
And, if it helps,
I usually find inspiration in the shower."
She smiles at his suggestion, then turns her entire focus to her tiny daughter. He goes back to bed. Someone in the ward has found a radio, and he finds himself listening to the Phillies play Houston in a doubleheader. They win one and lose one. And he chuckles as he eats his dinner because the results seem a perfect metaphor for his life, the war, and the world. On Saturday, when the corpsman wheels him into the nursery, the little girl is gone, and a baby boy with tight black curls is waiting to be held. Mark is his name. And his skin isn't as dark now as it one day will be, he's told. But a baby is a baby is a baby, and there's something cleansing in holding these new lives. Still, he is pleased to find that the charge nurse has a message for him. "The captain's daughter says to tell you that the shower helped, and the baby's name is Melissa." He is Private Miller, Gregory, and he served 3 years in Vietnam. And made it home wounded, but alive. He will never tell anyone, not his priest, not his best friends,
not even the woman he will one day marry, about the children his unit killed, or the children his unit left parentless and homeless, or the families whose homes were burned, or any of the other horrible things he saw. He will wrap those memories inside of a piece of olive drab canvas and hide them in the deepest parts of his heart. But he will also hold on to a better memory. On the day after the eclipse, on a hot and humid day in the middle of August, he met a brand new baby and was reminded that hope still exists in the world. He will continue to be reminded of that every time one of his own children is born, and his grandchildren as well. And often, he will volunteer to rock them.
Opening and closing music is a mix of Chris Zabriskie's The Oceans Continue to Rise from the Free Music Archive, and a clip of whales singing off the coast of French Polynesia provided by Kivoy to freesound.com. The Bathtub Mermaid, Tales from the Tub, is written and produced by Melissa A. Bartel and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 4.0 International License. For detailed show notes, including my contact information, please visit my website at bathtubmermaid.com. Thanks for listening, and remember, never let your bathwater get too cold.